We live in an interconnected world where the questions are complex, and so we have Babbel Undone. And it exists to have a conversation about issues of interest to all of us, or maybe things that make you a little curious. I'm Johnny Moore. I'm the co-host alongside Archbishop Joseph D'Souza. I'm an American evangelical leader. He leads the Good Shepherd movement in the All India Christian Council. He comes from the East. I come from the West. So naturally, we meet in London.
If you watch the news, you might be led to believe that a Muslim and a Christian world wouldn't have any common ground. But Johnny and I both know that couldn't be further from the truth. In this tense era of religious conflict and social unrest, it's important that we find ways to preserve peace with allies of all kinds. Our next guest is someone who truly believes that there's more that unites us than divides us. He has seen this firsthand and knows the remarkable power of interfaith cooperation.
Omar Kudrat, aside from being a personal friend of ours, is a remarkable human being. He's the founder of the Muslim Coalition for America. He's an attorney and a former official in the United States Department of Defense. In fact, he was a counterterrorism prosecutor and is currently a major in the U.S. Army Reserve. While serving in the Defense Department, Omar spent 18 months in Afghanistan as the coalition's deputy chief of rule of law and a political advisor to the NATO ambassador. He represented the United States in nations including Afghanistan, the UAE, Israel, and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. He's got a BA in philosophy from UCLA, an MA in international relations from the Maxwell School of Public Affairs at Syracuse University, an MS in public relations from the Newhouse School of Public Communications, also at Syracuse, and a JD, a Juris Doctorate, he's a lawyer, from the Syracuse Law School. Omar is the co-host of the Self-Centered Podcast, which aims to spark healthy public discourse and encourage listeners to reflect on their own views and beliefs. Bishop and I are excited that Omar has joined us today for this important, valuable conversation. Omar, welcome to Babbel Undone.
For those who are not familiar with your work in many different countries around the world, if there's one or two things they might want to know about Omar, what would that be?
And Omar, you can answer that question however you like. I mean, you have an incredible biography, and you know, our audience is acquainted with that. But you know, maybe you want to talk about the person a bit more before we get to the topic at hand.
First of all, I'm going to talk about two other people, not me first. Reverend Bishop, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor to be with you. You two are inspiring, and I think I'll start my answer with, I think we have a shared vision of the world.
Yeah.
And that binds us, whether we are aware of that or not. We are on the same mission and we're on the same team. Who I am is, firstly, I'm a servant to bringing about and generating greater compassion, security, and unity among humankind. And being an American, I serve my country first. I'm an American. And I think that America has done incredibly well to codify some of the universal truths that we all believe in our Constitution, at least the three of us, I know we do, in terms of inalienable rights and where rights come from. So that's my mission in life. In terms of who else I am, I'm a native Southern Californian. I play basketball, grew up going to the beach a lot, going to Laker game. And, you know, like Reverend Moore, sometimes I like engaging in competitive debates and winning those debates and expanding our sphere of influence, which I don't think... just to make it explicit, I don't think we or I have a very controversial position. Let's bring people together. Let's ease human suffering. Let's follow the ethos and the clear instructions of our Abrahamic faiths. And that's it. And if we don't do that, I think someone's got their hands on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Someone's going to have their hands on the steering wheel in the world. And so whether or not we can fully control the direction, at the very least, we better be using some of our energy to steer that.
Omar, you are an American. You're a lawyer. You have all these different facets to your personality, your experience, and Bishop and I certainly do share this common mission with you. Not just in theory. I mean, we've done a lot together on that front. But part of your identity and your experience is you're, you know, an American who is also the son of Afghan immigrants, you know, to the United States. And so I'm just curious how that shapes the way you approach all of these issues.
You know, interestingly, because I was born and raised in America, my Afghan heritage didn't really play much of a role in creating a distinction in my formative years or my beliefs. And in fact, I think one thing that I've said before elsewhere is there was a seamlessness to the view and the culture. You know, the people of Afghanistan are very just culturally very motivated and attached to the notion of freedom and liberty. And in that regard, there is a seamlessness with the culture and ethos of the United States. That being said, it certainly informed a great deal of my understanding of the world at an early age, which gave me a huge advantage. I think just for learning from my parents about different parts of the world, about the region, about Islam, about the different schools of thought in Islam, the way conflicts come about, and so forth. I would not have had that head start and that advantage unless I traveled out there or immersed myself on the ground there for many years. And so that did help me throughout my career. It did help me throughout my career because I was able to grasp the nuances as a counterterrorism official. I mean, you know, there, again, shared missions. You have most of the governments and people of Muslim countries that are doing their best to bring about security and stability and extinguish radical Islamic terrorism, radical Islamic terrorist networks from the face of the earth. And so, having my Afghan parents help me understand aspects that I don't think I would have if I were raised by non-Afghan, non-Muslim parents. But they also were just special parents, and so they gave me a lot of other distinguishing factors, and I'll just kind of leave it at that. But street smarts, that's just one big thing. They imported that as well, and so I got the street smarts not just by growing up in LA, but also my parents making me realize what a hustler is and what deception is and so forth, and that really served me well as I was dealing with some of those countries out there.
Yeah. In your role as an advisor with NATO, what were some of the outcomes that you saw or fruit that you saw, and how was that experience?
Well, when you have dozens of countries, and it's difficult to get them to agree on what day it is today, what the date is, it's difficult to generate consensus. And so, I think one of the big takeaways from NATO, and there's a lot of takeaways, is you can bring people together with incredibly disparate views on the strategic and tactical levels of how things should go and be organized and implemented and so forth, and still succeed and still have a team. So there is a multilateralism that was inherent in everything that NATO does, which generates a type of skill in you, that makes you realize you got to have everybody on board to do something, and you can't just kind of unilaterally go after something. And so it's coalition building, right? And this kind of goes to what the three of us do in various aspects. And Muslim Coalition for America, it's coalition building is so critical to doing and implementing and achieving your vision. And it's just like sports. I mean, I love sports. You need other players on your team. You know, I know that there are arguments, being a Laker fan, that Kobe Bryant didn't really need it. He might be the exception. He didn't need other players on the team, and he could just kind of win the game on his own. But for most of us who don't have Kobe Bryant skills in the coalition building or security or stability space, coalition building is critical. And so that's a highlight, at least, that I'll just mention here regarding NATO.
So, I mean, your career, has intersected with all kinds of complexity, and the things you chose to do, things you were assigned to do. That's how it is for all of us in life. And one of the things you've chosen to do is to engage in all this interfaith activity, and that's work we've all done together. As you said, have said. And another thing you chose to do was to create a new representative body for Muslims in the United States, the Muslim Coalition for America. I mean, that's kind of a big task, to take on. And so I'm just curious why you did that, why that was important, what makes it different from other organizations, that people could be a part of.
So America is unique in a number of ways, one of which is this. American Muslims have not had, to date, a positive national platform that they can engage with, one that reflects the reality of American Muslims. There's no home for American Muslims who want to engage in civic life outside of a couple very negative organizations that have the mic. And those organizations do not represent American Muslims. Nobody elected them. If you look at the polling data of the opinions of American Muslims, 9 out of 10 American Muslims identify themselves as patriots, patriotic Americans. The organizations that have the loudest voices in America that claim to represent American Muslims are anti-America. And they cloak it with buzzwords that sound like they are, proponents of the Constitution. They just divide people and wrap it with a bow that's called equality. They just throw out words like justice, equality, equity, and so forth and so on. And all the while, all they're really doing is tearing us apart from each other and I would say they contribute to anti-Muslim sentiment. They're almost a self-creating industry where they generate anti-Muslim sentiment, and so they're both setting the fire, and then they're acting like they're the fireman that needs to come put it out. American Muslims have not been served well for so many decades by these organizations, and you see it with the hate crime statistics and other measures. If it's the case that some of these organizations that I'm referencing, their primary focus is discrimination and anti-Muslim sentiment and hate crimes against American Muslims. Well, they totally failed. Look at the stats. Those numbers seem to just be spiking in cycles over and over. And I do not believe that these organizations benefit from a decrease. The more they can create an industry of victimhood and an indoctrination camp for American Muslims to believe that they're under attack by this country, by the United States. That there's a division between their own nation and themselves, these organizations, negative organizations, flourish in funding and so forth and so on. So American Muslims need a home where it reflects their actual views and values. And we are commissioning a national poll. I'll just mention this to put to rest all these lies about what American Muslims' views are. We will commission that national poll. And when we ask American Muslims, what are your top three issues? I can guarantee you that it's probably going to be the same as every other American. It's going to be inflation, it's going to be so forth and so on. So that's what inspired Muslim Coalition for America. I don't want to see another generation of American Muslims not having a home and essentially being under the thumb and falsely represented by these negative American Muslim organizations.
It's a tremendously noble endeavor that you have embarked on, Omar. I mean, the problem for us and for you is these extremist groups who purport to represent American Muslims have the mic and the loudspeaker, and their voice is heard. And I'm sure you are as uncomfortable as so many of us are, when you see the recent, you know, protests going on in the United States from all kinds of Muslim groups, and they end up chanting death to America. I mean, that is not where you are you?
That's not where most American Muslims are, and it does certainly bother me that they get in the news, but, you know, it's sensational, and it's people will click on it. Look, the bottom line regarding American Muslims is this. Most American Muslims, and you brought up the protests, and it has to do with the current conflict between Israel and Hamas. Most American Muslims are not from the Middle East, have no connection to the Middle East. And certainly we have to participate in civic life. And I'm not telling anybody what to think in terms of their foreign policy views and so forth. But if we're going to talk about human rights, let's talk about human rights. There are 2 million Muslims in dungeons in China right now. Does anyone care? There is an ethnic cleansing of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. Anybody want to talk about that? Just the number of Muslims in India amounts to over half of all Arab countries combined. And there are allegations of, look, I'm being careful with my words here, but discrimination and some level of oppression on the basis of their religious identity. American Muslims, we have lots of issues to address. And so I want the Middle East to finally find its way and make peace and not drag the whole world into it. I don't want the United States to be dragged into the events of the day that occur in this tiny region in the world. I pray for peace. I pray that these folks out there are able to come to a resolution with themselves. But no, I do not believe that the current events in one part of the world should have a stranglehold over our dynamics here at home among Muslims, Christians, and Jews.
It is sort of like strange, right, that you have because your experience is also my experience with lots of Muslim Americans that I know that were born in America. They came to America legally. They often came as refugees from countries, or they, you know, built themselves up by their own bootstraps, and they're very, very proud Americans. And it's like anytime something happens in the Middle East, it animates this, this activism. And, you know, I can understand how people disagree on, you know, on wars and the way the wars are being handled and all of these things and sympathies for the Palestinians and such. But what I really couldn't understand was I think we all sort of like watched this odd thing that happened on October 8th, you know, after the Hamas attack from Israel. Into Israel on October 7th, you know, last year, Israel hadn't even responded yet. And yet, you know, within a few hours, you had these, you know, these protests on college campuses and other places. And like, it's hard to believe that that was just purely a grassroots movement. And then it seems like there's this like silent majority that have a different approach, and even when they may disagree with the foreign policy of Israel or the United States, they have a different way of involving themselves in that. And you certainly see that here where we are today. In fact, it's probably more advanced here when you travel around Europe. You sort of like see this weird nexus between, you know, communist parties and between Islamists and Omar. I'll probably never forget for the rest of my life, you know, experience I had here in London in December. You know, Bishop D'Souza and I were recording another dozen or so podcasts. I couldn't get a flight out till the next day, and so I sort of like snuck into one of these pro-Hamas protests.
I loved your X-thread on that, by the way. If anybody hasn't read Reverend Moore's X-thread, I'd highly encourage you to do so, where he lays out his experience there, but please go ahead.
Yeah, and of all the things I saw there, what struck me the most was I watched a middle-aged white socialist. She came from the Socialist Workers Party tent, give a sign to a little Muslim girl that had an anti-Semitic phrase on it. It's like this little Muslim girl given a sign, an anti-Semitic sign, by a socialist. Like, it's just that little girl probably has no idea what the sign says, but she's the one that someone's going to take a picture of and put it on the front page of the newspaper. And it just seems all so upside down.
Johnny, this is not an organic movement. This is not an organic movement. There are tens of millions of dollars of dark money flowing to propagate these protests down to the events. And the receipts are out there. This is not a theory. You can look at the public disclosures of tens of millions of dollars that are flowing to organize these protests, and they are not coming from Muslim groups. So when you have an open source article in the United States where you have a protest organizer or demonstration or whatever you want to call it in Washington, D.C., saying that we have dispatched 1,000 buses or 500 buses, who's paying for that? Who's paying for that? Yeah, you know, these are the questions nobody's asking. So this is not an organic movement. The second thing that I'll say is this regarding the American Muslim organizations that have not served us so well. They have allied themselves with atheists, Marxists, socialists, and communists. And they've made a deal. That's their place politically. And they decided that that's where they're going to set their alliance. And so one reason why I'm very critical of these American Muslim organizations is that they have taken atheists as their leaders. And they have given, at least tried to, the following of American Muslims in America and place them under the influence of atheists, Marxists, and socialists, which their views are completely, whatever you want to call it, I'm not sugarcoating it. They're completely antithetical to the Abrahamic faiths, theologically, on every ground. So not an organic movement, and very critical of these Muslim groups that have allied themselves with atheists. And guess what? They're not equals with them. The atheists and the Marxists and the socialists are in charge.
Yeah, and we know something about that. Omar, as you have focused on the line of work which aims in helping these Muslims majority to have a better platform, to find their voice, and their authentic feelings towards America and all come out, what are some things, positive things that you have seen happen? What's the good news in terms of how your work and what you are trying to do that you can share with us? Because we support this whole initiative that you're doing, and we want American Muslims to be part of the larger American story.
We have to serve others. That is the greatest form and how people can be united. And so Muslim Coalition for America is not about just putting on a suit and tie, standing at a podium in D.C. and saying things to divide people. We actually deliver tangible impact. So we have conducted large-scale impact missions at unprecedented scales. We've only existed for a few years, and we have done more to serve those in need than these organizations combined that have been around for decades, because they don't care about that.
Yeah.
We do. So how better to bring together Jews, Christians, and Muslims than around an impact mission to serve others? So we've partnered with NBA teams like the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Dodgers, and we distributed high-quality educational materials to parents in Compton and so forth, because, as you know, the educational gap has afflicted the least well-off the most in the United States as a result of COVID and the, you know, continuing effects of that. We are identifying impact missions, and we have done impact missions for the entire homeless populations of Los Angeles County, San Diego County, San Francisco, Oakland, and so forth. And we are continuing, and we're taking this national. And so one of the primary activities of Muslim Coalition for America is not doing a lot of talking, but just normalizing and having, and the media will just see Jews, Christians, and Muslims together serving those who are in need and serving others. And I think that that is probably one of the best ways for us to not just compete, but ultimately prevail in the communication war, I'll call it, in terms of portraying what the reality of America is and the reality that we want it to be. And so I look forward to the normalization of people going online and seeing Jews, Christians, and Muslims together, and that being totally normal, and us serving others.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Omar, yours is always a voice of wisdom and a voice of practical action. And I think everyone, listening to us, recognizes, if they have been listening closely, that there are things that they can do themselves. And it begins with exactly what you've done, which is serve others first. And I can say, at least for the two of us, and I know there are a lot more people like us, we are so grateful for your wise words, and they're coming at a time, unfortunately, where there's a lot more radicalization, and we're back into everyone looking and thinking skeptically of the other. And it's voices like yours that prove those people wrong and show that there's a better way. And we believe sincerely that there are far more of you than there are of them. Thank you for joining us. Bishop Omar Kudrat is a personal friend of ours, and I hope a lot more people are inspired by his work after this conversation. There's so many facets to what we just spoke to Omar about. I imagine you have a few things that will stay with you from the conversation.
Very much, Johnny. The sad thing is, when you look at the Muslims in America, for example, all that the media portrays is this small, and he's right, small extremist groups who are financed, directed by players that are not seen, to be at odds with the country that they have chosen. And Omar comes out and says, look, the majority of Muslims don't think that way in America. The majority of Muslims are not fighting and saying death to America. Their voice is not heard. And the Muslims that are there in the States, whose parents and all migrated, they don't even have the history of what's happened back there and why their parents came. And I like the emphasis that he said, this campaigns that he does, the social campaigns with Jews and Christians and Muslims, is one sure way to break down this hostility and barriers that has risen in America.
Yeah, and as Christians, I mean, we have a responsibility to know our neighbors. Like, God does not allow us to not try to befriend everyone. I mean, it's our responsibility as Christians to love our neighbors. And I think one of the tragedies of the way, political Islam, which is really what he's speaking a lot about, now we literally, Bishop, in the United States of America, have people chanting death to America in our streets, just like what happens in Islamist countries. And it is unbelievable how the actual Islamophobia, which they're trying to combat, they're actually fueling it. And if you actually stop and get to know your Muslim neighbors, I mean, I have a lot of Muslim friends in the United States, and they're all like Omar. They're not like those crazy people, in the streets. And I think we can all do more to work together. And Omar gave us a good playbook. Just go find a need, find a couple of reasonable people. It doesn't matter if they believe differently than you. And just meet that need together. And then you know one another. And that's how we change the world. Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in. God bless.